It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will. But then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
All right. I'm going to do a thing here that is maybe a bad idea. I don't know. You know how you have one of those things that you're just like, this could be problematic, so I'm not going to tell anyone except my dear life partner in private. Well, I had one of these, and I've slowly been telling other people, and I've decided I'm going to tell the podcast because I would love to hear counterarguments, because I would love to be sort of wrong in this opinion. I don't know. And I mostly don't care about your opinion. Because you're also a white guy, and that's not so much a thing here. I'm worried that this makes me a bad feminist, but this is just a thing I have noticed. So, for much of recorded media, we've done a real shitty job with female roles. Very often being props, essentially. No agency, or having single stereotypical defining characteristics. And that's changing. And I love that that's changing some. It's not changing enough, but that we have lots of examples now. Including a lot of examples where the whole sort of premise to whatever the property is she's living in the world of patriarchy and she's not gonna take it anymore. And that's awesome, and I was so excited when these things started, and that was sort of the meat of it. I'm getting tired of that being the meat of it. Like, we have so many things where the whole thing is, yeah, She decided that she doesn't like patriarchy, either unconsciously or consciously, and now she's decided not to deal with it anymore, and it's either going to be clever and witty or badass or both. But the problem is, far too often it's like, and that is the sum total of her character. And there was a time where that was great. We needed that representation, and we still to a degree need it. The first Wonder Woman is a great example. If I look at the first Wonder Woman now, it seems a little quaint by comparison. But at the time, big deal and all that. And I'm just, there seems to be so, I feel like the money-grubbing part of show business has figured out that this is a popular trope. And they're just putting so many of them out there. And I hate that I'm at the point where I'm like, well, this is a story about a woman fighting back against patriarchy. And I have to be like, nah, sounds boring. Like, that thought, let alone those words, is terrible to me. But we just have so many of them now that I'm just like, okay, and what else about it? Mm-hmm. So am I just turning into a misogynist asshole? Or is this a real trend that is a thing? And why are so many of them starring Millie Bobby Brown? I love her, but man, she's in a lot of these.
Well,
sorry. All of this kicked off when I recently got to see the trailer for Damsel.
Mm-hmm. Do you think there's only those two choices? I mean, because a person can get fatigued with a particular message or whatever, even if they believe in it. Like,
yes,
that's doesn't mean they don't believe in that message or they're bad at being a champion for that cause. It's just people.
No, I would say that is then the first option. Like, that's what I'm saying. Is this just in my head Or is this really a problem? Or at least a tiresome thing? If it's just in my head, then I'm a misogynist asshole. And then if it's not, then I am a groundbreaking feminist for speaking truth to power on my super popular podcast of two white guys.
I think it's probably a good sign in our culture that there is so much of this stuff that a person can be particular about what which of those things they like and don't like, right? I mean, it's a matter of taste, obviously. Some people are going to think of this as a genre and they're going to love it. And the fact that one is just like the other is going to delight them because that's what they want. But other people are going to be like, yeah, you know, I like the message this has, but I prefer the message maybe to be more sophisticated or more complicated. I don't think one person is more feminist than the other.
Yes, this is why I don't really care about your as our listeners. I want our listeners to respond, particularly the women ones, particularly the not white dude ones. But the white dudes can say stuff too if they feel this way. And I always feel weird about this because it was not long ago that this kind of representation was really, really lacking, and we needed a ton of it. And one could argue we still haven't achieved levels of representation in this to this degree that we need. But whenever you're dealing with representation, there comes a point where it's like, okay, you're doing it for representation's sake, and you've done that quite a bit now. Can we add on to that?
Well, so, you know, there's a question of quantity and quality. And this, you know, the way I explain this to a lot of people is, let's say in our society we had sex parity in everything. Like 50% of Congress was women, 50% of CEOs were women. Let's say we achieved that.
Oh, see, I was still thinking of the film subgenre sex parity. So I was confused.
Let's say. But the work of feminism might not still be done, because if women in those positions have to behave in a very specific way to get those positions, for example, if 50% of the people in Congress are women, but those politicians get criticized for what they're wearing and what their makeup looks like when the male politicians don't, well, then we've reached a certain equality in quantity, but not quality. So yes, there's the quantitative aspect of, well, we need a proportional representation of these types of characters, but that doesn't mean we've hit the, you know, a quality that is really adequate to represent not just women in number, but women in, there's all kinds of women, is a wide variety of women being represented, or just, you know, two or three types of women being represented.
Yeah. And maybe it comes back to my similar thing of hating all these remakes and reboots and sequels, because a lot of these things, which originally I thought was extremely clever and interesting, but so many of these things are like, let's take an existing story, but now it's a woman and it's feminist.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So let's take the classic damsel story, but now the damsel saves herself. Let's take the thing that caused me to say it's the Trish is, there's a musical called Anne Juliet that's out, and it's going to be touring soon. It's been on Broadway for a while, but it's going to be touring soon. And she was like, I'm going to go. I think my sister's going to go. You want to come? And I said, I don't really think I do, for two reasons. One is the premise of Anne Juliet is, apparently at the end of Romeo and Juliet, she decides not to kill herself because he's dead, and instead goes and lives her. And also it's a musical that does a lot of making use over again of existing popular music. First of all, I hate those kind of musicals, Moulin Rouge notwithstanding. I could not tell you why I hate those kind of musicals or why Moulin Rouge is the exception, but in general, unoriginal music in musicals, no thank you. But also, again, it feels like this, oh yeah, what if Romeo and Juliet, but it wasn't, bullshit patriarchy. I'm like, or a new thing. How about a new thing? So maybe it's that. Maybe it's that this is yet another way. And this comes up in a lot of things now. I don't think in movies where I feel like this is the defining characteristic and sort of there's nothing else going on. I don't think Trish and I have disagreed as to whether or not it was a good movie, but there have been several where I'm like, that movie was bad. And Trish was like, yeah, it was, but I enjoyed it. And I think, again, she potentially was felt more seen or it resonated more with her. But even in those circumstances, she's like, I don't know that it was good.
The interesting thing about movies that are trying to create representation and maybe say something about the culture that it's made in is if culture progresses in the way that you and I understand progress and other people who want to see different people receive more visibility and more inclusion in society, that movie would have to eventually become dated, right? And would have to eventually become something that's not as interesting. Like, in other words, the person who's making the film, all of the things that are motivating them to make it the way they do, logically, they would want it 20 years from now to not be as relevant and to not be as interesting. I mean, that comes with the territory.
And it comes up in times in the past where I have had movies that I thought were classics and I showed them to people that hadn't seen them, or even TV shows. This actually happened when I had Trish watch Babylon 5. I was like, it seems cliched, but they were the first ones to do this. It wasn't cliched then. It is now.
It's kind of like the opposite of the racism fairy, right? Where it's like, you know, it's still good. And you can look at it in historical context and say this was good. But you have to acknowledge that it's out of place now. And for good reasons. Like, you're glad it is. You're glad that
and sometimes that it's better. Like that somebody did it better later. You did it first.
Yes.
The She-Hulk TV show did a lot of things, broke through a lot of things for being a Disney show and a Marvel show and all sorts of stuff. I don't know that it did them well, but it was the first of a lot of them, and I thank them for that. And honestly, the easiest straightforward argument here that other people can give is, Tony, these aren't for you. In which case, yeah, cool. I feel that way about the upcoming remake of The Crow, which I'm still confused why they're doing it, because I'm like, it's clearly not for those of us who watched The Crow. It's for another generation. But isn't the later generation not interested in The Crow? Is there a later generation? So I don't know who it's for. But it looks really good, but very much not for me.
Yeah.
And if that's the answer, that's great. I want to know. I don't like this thought in a vacuum because it's not interesting. I want to know how this bounces off the rest of the world. Have other people been noticing this and feeling similar? Am I missing a big part of this, which I'm totally willing to buy? Mm. Or is it just like, yeah, dude, there are people, maybe women, who still can't get enough of this shit because they haven't had it and it's not for you, in which case that's also totally fine. So sound off in the comments, or, you know, go to the blog, magicstalkinghat.com, and tell me. Also, hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat podcast, the only podcast in the world that is made up entirely of white guys and is constantly sorry that it's made up entirely of white guys and wishes that it wasn't, but we're the only people involved, so we'd have to leave it and give it to somebody else, in which case it's just a different podcast, so why bother? Also, nobody hardly listens, so who cares? So sorry that we're white guys. I was in a coffee shop and I overheard two baristas talking, and one, I don't know the context. If I had to guess, I would say maybe one of them was named Abel, because the other one was saying, your catchphrase should be, I'm willing and able. And then they were like, or you should do a podcast with a guy named Will, and call it Willing and Able. And he said, that actually could be cool because I know a guy named Will and I would love to do a podcast with him. And so I said, it's also a great way to maintain friendships. I've been doing a podcast with a guy named Will for 13 years and we have like 6 listeners, but it's kept our friendship alive. So good. And they said, that's awesome in a way that was like, why were you listening? Take your coffee and get out of here. So just thought I'd share that. If you're just joining us for the first time, I don't believe you exist. But if you do, we have a hat. It is magical in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. People write into that with stuff, whatever they feel like. And the hat magically forwards the emails to us from its email. And we read them. Talk about them until we're bored. That's pretty much the show, except most of the time we're talking about our own shit. Because, again, weak premise, we're just two dudes. Nobody, hardly anybody's listening. I mean, the best 6 people are listening, but they are still only 6 people on a good day. So here we are at Peter's Donuts. How was your week?
So you have to take an exam to get to get a therapist license in Iowa, and I'll be taking that in like 3 weeks. So I'm spending most of my free time studying for that, which is an interesting experience because it's fun for me in a lot of ways because it's like,
God, you're such a nerd.
I was saying, it's fun to, you know, to see that how much I know about some things, but it's also fun when I don't know something and I can look it up and, oh, I didn't know that. And then I get this little interesting new piece of knowledge and I can take some notes and I can look some things up and put some things on my reading list. I understand
how you didn't get beat up so much as a teenager. Okay. I do not doubt your earnest belief here. And I even understand it to a degree. But it's important to me to know that you know, saying it's really fun to study for an exam, in particular the parts where I don't know the answer,
yeah,
is an absolute bonkers thing to say, right? I mean, you get...
I don't know.
You don't? You really don't? You don't think that most people would be like, what the fuck are you talking about? It's an exam. It's not fun. Also, it should be scary when you don't... Like, you understand. Please tell me you understand this, because if not, we got problems. Like, that's some base level society shit. I'm not saying those people are right. I'm saying you get that most people would feel that way, right?
Let me explain my perspective on it, and that maybe that'll answer your question.
It really
so won't. The part about, you know, it's just fun to learn new things, but I am like losing sleep over this exam. Like, I am afraid that I won't pass it. Not because anything tells me I won't per se, but some people, I mean, I know people who haven't passed it who are like smarter than me. So I do worry about it. I lose sleep.
No, and that makes sense.
Yeah. I totally
doesn't agree. Remotely address what I'm saying.
Oh. Because you're saying when I find out I get an answer wrong, that should like excite that fear in me, and it shouldn't be a pleasurable experience to like
learn. I'm not even saying any of that is true. I'm saying you get the vast majority of people, for all intents and purposes, literally everyone else on the planet would not express what you just expressed and would found what you expressed to be crazy.
Right? I understand a lot of people would, but surely there are other people who, like me, are so interested in this topic that it's exciting to learn new things.
All right. That's fair that you would think that. I'm here to tell you right now, it's not. Those people don't exist. But I can understand that. I just wanted you to be clear that overall, the average, the archetypical member of society would be like, okay. What are you talking about?
I get it. That's fine.
Okay, that's all I want to be. You get down with your weird self. I just wanted to... I have gotten beyond trying to fix you at this point. I just want to make sure you understand how incredibly broken you are.
Okay.
Because so that you can properly interact with us normies. So, all right.
How am I going to properly interact with normies if I don't, if I'm so broken?
I mean, mostly stay quiet.
Well, fortunately, that is mostly what I do.
You're pretty tall, reach things on high shelves when asked. That's basically it.
Fortunately, that is the strategy that I typically adopt, yes.
All right. Also, I feel like some sort of disclaimer maybe written and laminated to your patients every time you start a therapy session. I actually had a therapist who had a thing like that. Not that they were weird, but it was like a rule thing that I had to sign of like what I expect of you, what you expect of me, mm-hmm. what I will and won't do. It was interesting. At the time, it seemed really brilliant. And I thought that therapist was my favorite therapist of all time. Since then, I have recontextualized things and I'm less sure. But they did help me, which was great.
We are instructed to have those things and give them to people before therapy. That's like a normal thing.
Not the existence of such a thing that was weird. The content of hers was very.
Oh, okay. Okay.
But no, I like the idea. I mean, I like the idea of being very upfront about expectations and boundaries and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, they'll have whole learning modules about what they call informed consent. And what the basics of informed consent is, hey, you know, this is all confidential here, but I'll warn you that if you talk about this, this, or this, I'll have to disclose that to the authorities because I'm a mandatory reporter, blah, blah, blah. That's the very basic, but a lot of people feel like informed consent should also include, you know, what's my theoretical approach? What are my expectations? What happens if you don't show up for a session? You know, all of that stuff should be in there. What you can expect from me, what I expect from you, all that should be in there as part of informed consent. And some people do it and some people don't.
I feel like this one was probably had some previous issues because it had a lot of specific things about like, I will not attend any social function with you. We are not friends. That kind of thing.
Yeah, sometimes those are encouraged.
And I know stories, so I'm like, okay.
Yeah, one thing that they say, one thing you can, and some people say should, put in one of these agreements is to tell someone, if I see you in public, I'm not going to approach you. Or you can approach me, that's your choice, but I'm going to act like I don't know you, so just be aware. Some people think you should tell a client that ahead of time so that they're not weirded out if they see you in public and you don't talk to them. Because you shouldn't talk to them because you could be breaking confidentiality by interacting with them like that.
That is interesting. I mean, that's a good idea. Nobody's ever said that to me, and it's me, so I wouldn't even notice. I'd just be like, hey. But
yeah.
That's an interesting one. Mm-hmm. That might have been in that one. I don't know. It was a long time ago. I've done a lot of drugs since then. All right. Anything interesting in your week besides studying?
Really? No. And hopefully that'll continue until I take it because I really do need to study for it. It's really stressing me out, honestly, but hopefully I'll pass.
But it's so fun.
What?
But it's so fun.
I mean, it is kind of, if I had more confidence that I was going to pass it, I would just have fun studying for it, but I don't know if I'll pass it. And like I said, a lot of people who I think are way smarter than me had to take it more than once. I really don't want to have to take it more than once. It's an expense. It also means that there are certain business implications for it, you know, down the road when I'm trying to get a temporary license. So I really want to pass. I need to, not just because I want to, you know, for the normal reasons a person wants to pass a test, but because there's a certain timing of my career
that
this would be better if I passed it the first
time. This is standard William Bidness, and you will definitely pass. But I think part of the process is that you will study the shit out of it. So I don't want to dissuade you from being scared.
Anyway, how was your week?
Warmer, because we got a furnace.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Nice. Nice.
took quite a while. Had people crawling up in my attic. They stayed till almost 8 without letting me know that they might stay past normal.
Wow.
We had a conversation. I love this company. They did a great job. I plan to use them again. I have some constructive criticism for them about communication of time management. Unfortunately, I just figured out I don't actually have a source to contact them directly, only just the info at the company. So I may have to look into that. But anyway, so now we have a high efficiency 2-stage furnace and a water pump to get the condensation out from it, which means when we replace our water filter, our water heater, which will probably happen very soon, it will also just hook into there. So that's good. So yeah, it's pretty snazzy. It's a lot quieter. The cats are happy again. So we got heat back.
The cats didn't like the cold or whatever.
They like heater vents and stuff. They like to lay on heater vents.
Oh, sure. Of course.
Although they actually really liked the space heaters that came in.
Oh, they did.
Last time, because they blew hot air right on them. It's great. Ezzy in particular found she could lay right here next to me, which is a spot she likes when she's feeling very relaxed. And the thing would blow hot air right on her. She was blissed out. It was we watched a few movies and things. We finished Death and Other Details, and it flamed out spectacularly and clearly is set up for a sequel season in a way that pretty much eliminates all the most famous people involved but keeps around all the sexiest looking ones that you've never heard of. I will not watch it, assuming it actually got renewed. I will not watch it. It's so ridiculous. At one point, I had to leave the room because I had so many problems with what had just been said on the screen. And I came back and I'm like, okay, I've distilled this down to 3 things. That's not how police investigations work. That's not how explosions work. And that's not how DNA works. Like, wow. I actually have like 100 things here. But we can distill them down to those 3.
So that hat trick right there.
It's full of plot holes. It's one of those that has twists for twist's sake. It has a lot of twists you totally could see coming, and it has a lot of twists you didn't because they don't make a damn bit of sense. It was so many lines that were delivered as though they were really profound. That really were not. I guess spoiler alert, it doesn't turn out to be a virtual reality simulator or a coma dream, which is the only way that the flashback setup makes any sense. it got worse since the last time I complained about it. It got really dumb.
Oh.
In so many ways. Oh, it was kind of a fun time in a way, but bonkers. And terrible. We started watching Shogun because Trish couldn't wait any longer. Even though it's only half over, and it was Trish's thing. I wasn't super interested. I read the book years ago. I don't think I would find the book as compelling now. So yeah, I don't know. There is one interesting thing, a character that I enjoyed enough that I actually remember him from the book, even though it was 30 years ago or whatever, is played by Nestor Carbonell, who I think of as mostly just a workhorse guy from sitcoms and things. You would probably remember him as the cop who took over in Bates Motel after the first one died or whatever. But I remember him from a lot of different sitcoms where he just put on a vaguely Latin accent. Which, to be fair, I think he has something of an accent. Although I've seen him in a lot of things, he can turn it on and off. So I don't know what his actual voice sounds like. But he's in this, and I really like it so far. We'll see how they do with the character. But
I mean, he was in Lost.
And, was he in Lost also?
Yeah. that's where most
I first introduced that. Was introduced to him in a sitcom on the burgeoning, barely heard of Fox Network called Muscle, that was all about a gym, and he was, I think, Italian in that one. He gets to trade nationalities all the time in different things. He was also a photographer in the TV show Suddenly Susan. And yeah, I've seen him a few times. I mean, he's quite the actor, but this is like a real role. Like, this is a meaty thing. So I'm pleased for him because he's a good actor.
Oh yeah, I think he is.
but we'll see. Yeah, I don't really care about it. I'll watch it, but I don't really care. I had some other ones. We watched a movie I was very excited about called You'll Never Find Me, that's on Shudder now. That the trailer, it's one of those trailers where you watch it and you're like, I don't know what's going on, but it really made me want to know what's going on. Did not like it.
That's too bad.
Did not like it personally. It turned out to be about things that I do not enjoy, and had I known, I would not have watched it.
Oh.
But also, it's a short film stretched out to 100 minutes. It's also not an original concept. Trish was like, oh, it did something different. I'm like, no, I've seen this. I think it was an episode of Twilight Zone. It was an episode of a lot of those shows. It's not a new idea. it is, and I've never said this about a film before. The entire film is in slow motion, even though mechanical slow motion is not used at all. Like, everybody just moves so slowly and pauses so much. It had some interesting shots in it. I don't think I want to say it was well shot. It was well acted, but writing, direction, and again, it just didn't have enough material. And it's, the whole thing's a mystery of what's going on. Well, the answer is, the most obvious answer is what's going on. And there's a couple different things, so you can have like a twist. But if you're like, oh, it seems like it's this, but is it? Yes, it is. It's exactly what you think it is, or what you think it must not be, because that's too obvious. I was super unimpressed and sad about that. I just last night finished the first Lockwood and Company book.
Oh.
Really enjoyed it. Plan to read more. You know me nowadays, I don't read them back to back to back, so I'm going to read something else next, but I will come back to them. They are very good, or at least the first one was. It's a pretty cool lore setup, but also the three main characters that constitute the ghost hunting agency, despite the fact that they're teenagers, which means I should hate them, their dynamic is written really well and really believable and really interesting. Like, they don't all get along, but they also all have each other's back and have there's a lot of just interactions. They are becoming over time very fleshed out characters for all. The whole thing is narrated by the female character, but all three of them, like, I'm getting a very strong sense of them. But it's also just a compelling world. I enjoy it. I do hate, I may have mentioned this before, it is very much translated to U.S. English.
Hmm.
And that's very uncomfortable for me. They eat a lot of tea and cookies. They look at things with their flashlights, not torches. All the spellings have been adjusted. The temperatures, because it's a ghost thing and, you know, cold spots and all that, are all given in Fahrenheit. But it's set in the UK, and in fact, the whole problem with ghosts is specifically the British Isles. But they all talk about the temperatures in Fahrenheit. And I'm just like, really? Especially because you don't need to know what the temperatures are. You just need to know that one number is lower than the other. Like, I don't even, but whatever. It still keeps, I think, the spirit of it, and that's good. But
spirit, yeah. Of it. Nice. You didn't watch the TV show or the...
I watched the first episode or maybe two episodes and stopped. A, I wasn't really into it. And B, I was like, I'll bet the books are awesome. Like, I was like, this seems like a really cool idea, and I'm not sure this TV show is doing it proper.
Yeah.
So I very purposely stopped to read the books. in the process of not yet having read the books, I found out that my niece, who's in college now, who is an avid reader, this is her, you know, how a lot of us who started reading at an early age have like that one series that was, but for me, it was the Dark is Rising series by Susan Cooper. This is her series. This is like her favorite series. And I was like, oh, even more reason. But yeah, I'm getting more onto that. In fact, I plan to read The Three Body Problem.
Was just going to bring that up.
Because I don't, it was a very well-received book and very popular, which is why they're making a TV show. And I'm like, I'm going to have to pick.
Oh, which am I going to do? Three Body Problem TV show. Every single episode, I'm thinking to myself, wow, I'll bet this is really awesome in the book. Not in the TV show. But it's such a good idea, right? That it's like, I'll bet this book is just freaking amazing.
It was huge. It technically is the first of a series that apparently decreased in popularity and increased in Chinese nationalism. Oh, and the two may be related. But the first one was a huge hit. And
yeah. Well, here's the best. I think there's all kinds of problems. I think they didn't get the budget they wanted. I think there's all, you know, I'm constantly trying to guess why it's not working as a TV show. But probably the best scenario, the one that I think would be most complimentary to the creators and everything else, is it's kind of like when I go to a Harry Potter movie and I don't understand what's going on, but everyone who read the books thinks it's fine. So that's the best I can give them, is that they're trying to hit the beats from the book that people who read it would recognize. And so people who are watching it, who read the books, probably think it's great, right? And it's only people like me who haven't read the books that think it's not quite right. But yeah, do read the books before you watch the show. And maybe you'd actually enjoy the show after reading the books. Maybe it would be fun to see. That seems
unlikely.
Okay, well, yeah.
That's the thing. It usually goes one of two ways. I watch the movie and or the series, and then I don't read the book, because I don't really have the impetus once I've done that. Or I read the book, and if I watch the movie or the series, I'm unhappy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like for the Harry Potter thing, people just liked to see Hogwarts. They liked to see those characters.
Yeah. And I did to a degree. Harry Potter is a weird exception in that my views on the books and the movies are very different now. And also, some of that may be inextricably tied to my views on the author, but not all of them. I think it just is dated to me now in a way that doesn't really work anymore for me.
Sure.
Weirdly, I thought I might pick up Three Body Problem next, but weirdly, I picked up the first of the Murderbot Diaries, which is a sci-fi series about a self-aware robot that calls itself a Murderbot. That are very short little sort of novellas that have been very popular amongst people I know who read things. So I've been meaning to check them out. So, so that's what I'm going to do next. But all right, we are getting low on time, which is probably means we aren't going to have an email, which is okay, because we are running low. You people need to email us more or else sad. But I need to talk about another movie that I watched.
Okay.
And if this doesn't fill up the rest of the time, I can talk about Waffle House training videos. And if not, I can save that for another time. So tune in next week. One night, I'm sitting around, and often I tuck Trish into bed about two and a half hours before I go to bed in general. And so the question always comes, what do I do with my time? And frequently it's not video games, because video games are slightly too interactive and it can make it then hard to go to sleep. So books, movies, TV, these kind of things, very common. And often I'm like, this is a perfect time to watch a dumbass horror movie. But of late, I have trouble with those, especially because I look for the found footage ones that I like. I appear to have seen most of them.
Wow.
Much more commonly nowadays, I go through and I'm like, oh, this look. Oh, no, I saw that one. Oh, this look. Oh, no, I saw that one. And so I'm really scraping the bottom of the barrel. I saw some shitty ones recently. Real, real bad. Or I think I'm like, I think this is actually just a documentary. And they don't always label them correctly. Sometimes they label some as documentary that aren't, and sometimes they don't label ones that are.
That's funny.
And as we all know, as much as I love movies about ghost hunters, I hate actual ghost hunters. And I'm pissed because I watched one recently, I think I talked about, that was very bad and was definitely fake, but was done as though it were a real one and like just about as scary as a real one would have been. So I was like, I was so bored. No, there has to be, it has to turn out there's actually something and that fucking kills you or whatever. So it sucked. But anyway, so I'm looking for these things. I'm not finding anything, really. And then I happen across a movie called Nefarious. And according to the description, a psychiatrist is brought into a prison because a man who's supposed to be executed the next day is claiming to be possessed by a demon. And so the psychiatrist is going to have to sign off on this guy being mentally competent to be executed. And it's all freaky. And in fact, at the start of the interview, the prisoner tells him that by the end of this, the psychiatrist will have murdered 3 people. And it's like 90 minutes. And I'm like, yeah, sure. That sounds fucking bizarre. Let's do it. I watched it.
Yeah.
I want to say up front, I liked it. I enjoyed watching it. It was just fun. But also, I think it had some compelling performances, some not compelling performances, but a couple of people did real well in it. And it was very interesting to me.
Okay.
So I want that clear up front, because everything else I'm about to say may seem to contradict that. So it is a very slow burn thing. It is very much a psychiatrist talking to a demon for the bulk of the, or a dude possessed by a demon for the bulk of the runtime. And it's a lot of philosophical viewpoints and a lot of dialectic sort of, and building into the lore in a very Christian mythos kind of way, which Trish and I both always have a lot of fun with. Trish was not watching this at the time. But at a certain point, I'm like, this demon seems to have surprisingly specifically conservative social values. Or more accurately, the opposite. But like, the things this demon seems to view as evil seem very specific in a way that I've heard evangelicals say before. And hits on very sort of specific things. And at a certain point, I'm like, and we work really hard to make the psychiatrist a very sort of liberal atheist type. And some weird sort of social arguments in places. And it got pretty intense to that. And at the very end, I mean, I guess spoilers, our protagonist survives. And he has written a book and is being interviewed about the book by Glenn Beck, played by Glenn Beck.
What? Wow.
And I was like, huh. So I looked it up.
Yeah.
And sure enough, Wikipedia right up front refers to it as a Christian thriller movie. And I was like,
wow. Oh. Wow.
And it is based on a book that does not have the same title as the movie, but does have the same title as the book that the protagonist wrote at the end.
And what's it called again? This movie was made
by a couple of people who do a lot of Christian films, one of whom who is a devout Catholic, and who claims that the entire shooting of it was cursed, and there were many accidents, and they had to bring in a priest to exorcise at one point, and all sorts of stuff.
What's this movie called?
Nefarious, which is also really hilarious because at a certain point they ask the demon his name, and the demon says it's an old Phoenician. I have a lot of names, but the name I'm best known by is this old Phoenician word that you wouldn't know. The closest translation into English is Nefariamus. And the psychiatrist is like, Nefarious? And he doesn't correct him. And the rest of the movie, that's just what he calls him. And that's what the captions call him. So I'm like, you really had to shoehorn that name in there. But it's, again, I enjoyed it. It is very obviously Christian propaganda. Huh. But it's kind of cool. And it really delves into... It presents a certain argument of the motivations of fallen angels that I found quite interesting. And his plan, while again, it definitely feels like something that a hardcore fundamentalist Christian thinks about while he masturbates, is still a compelling, interesting, evil plan for demons to have. And again, very well performed. And there's also, I hesitate to call it a subplot, but one of the things about it is the demon is intentionally tormenting the host that he inhabits. And there are ways he does that that are subtler than you might think. And there are times where the host is free to be himself and is very different. And it's very interesting to watch this actor play both of these characters. For those who would know about such things, I kind of don't, but it has come to me. This guy also played one of the Boondock Saints in the original Boondock Saints movie, and also plays the guy in the seventh Saw movie that's the one who wrote a book about his experience with the Jigsaw Killer, but it turns out he didn't actually have an experience with the Jigsaw Killer, which makes the Jigsaw Killer mad, so then he does have an experience with the Jigsaw Killer. Anyway, it's that actor. And supposedly... they're working on a sequel to the movie and a sequel series. And I'm very curious, but it's, I very seldom run into this where it's very clearly conservative propaganda, but I still found it a pretty good movie. I mean, it didn't convince me of anything. Mm-hmm. And for the record, for those of you who aren't horror driven, there is, other than, you know, somebody breaking a limb or something, there's no blood or anything particularly in it. There's obviously no swearing. That's a good sign. When the hellish demon won't say fuck, you know, I don't think there's swearing. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe there is. I don't think there is, though.
Did you ever read the Screwtape Letters?
No, I mean to. Actually, I think I want to get the Audible thing for it because Cleese does it. And oh. I kind of think Cleese is an asshole these days, but he narrates a good tale.
Oh, well, I mean, you mentioned it was, they had interesting ideas about the motivations of fallen angels or whatever. Of course, the Screwtape Letters is all about trying to get into the mind of a demon and the way they think and why they do the things they do, which I thought C.S. Lewis did a very compelling and interesting job with that, those ideas. In fact, I believe, and this might be apocryphal because I didn't read anything from C.S. Lewis that said this, but it's been said that he was disturbed by in the writing of it because it was so it was so psychologically, you know, he had to put himself in a psychological place that was very dark and very gross, kind of, I guess.
But it's weird because they're by and large comedic, yeah.
The Screwtape Letters.
I thought it was.
Well, it's probably much like this film. It depends on who's watching it, right? Like, because the person who's being interviewed, you know, is you can see it as funny for sure. You know, it's a, but if you're a believer, right? If you believe that demons are real, it can seem like a very convincing portrayal of what demons are like, and it can freak you out, right? And I think for C.S. Lewis, who was a believer, I mean, he thought he was attempting to do was to convey what a real, I mean, I think he believed in demons. But that said, even if he didn't, it can be disturbing to write a psychologically disturbing character.
I could see non-religious, non-supernatural versions that I could write that would freak me the fuck out.
Yeah, right. But I think a lot of people who are believers who read the Screwtape Letters can be very freaked out about it. But you're right. I've known some non-believers who read it and they think it's quite wry. You know, it seems like, right? Because some of what the demon thinks and does is so clever and is such a kind of a, you could read it as sort of a winking commentary at how religion works and how human beings work.
Yeah.
So to a certain reader, I definitely, yeah, probably seems almost like a Swiftian satire or something. But to believers, it can be totally terrifying and frightening. And I guess I don't know which one would be C.S. Lewis's case. If he just, again, it could be disturbing to write a disturbing character regardless of what you believe. Yeah. But I do think for him, he was a believer and he was a Christian apologist, a Christian apologist. So I think for him, there was even a spiritual aspect of it that was difficult for him in writing it. But I think he felt compelled to write it because I think he felt that it was that the nature of evil was a thing, because there was a whole era there. I don't know if you've noticed, there was a whole historical era there of authors who thought that human beings were forgetting the nature of evil and they were letting their guard down. And this is what let things like Hitler happen, was people weren't aware of how evil worked.
This is a common theme in a lot of the Name of the Rose. The villain has a similar view of this. And this movie has that.
Yeah. Right. Yep.
Part of the argument is that all the tolerance and love we have in society now is really just a way of convincing ourselves that we're not sinning. And for the record, this movie is not wry. This movie takes itself extremely seriously.
Yeah.
But I would say I did not appreciate it ironically per se. It was a compelling performance. Like, again, did not convince me of anything. But yeah, some of it may go to the guy portraying the possessed dude. It was very impressive, but I don't know. It was just, I found myself very engaged in their conversation.
Well, I think it speaks to the power of good storytelling. I mean, people complain sometimes about whatever they think the ideology is behind a story. But many people say, and I think they're right when they say this, if the story was good enough, people wouldn't care so much. I mean,
yes,
I just think that's true.
To speak of C.S. Lewis, Chronicles of Narnia, I loved that as a kid and somehow missed the heavy Christian overtones.
Yeah, right.
And then years later reread it and was like, oh my God, how did I miss this? But it's because it was a good story.
Yeah, right.
But that is the exception.
Yeah.
By and large, if you have a very blunt, very often one-sided political agenda, your story or your humor or whatever sucks.
Yeah.
And this is incredibly blatant and incredibly one-sided. And I mean, don't get me wrong, it's not a masterpiece. It's not a great film. I enjoyed my time with it. I found it interesting and entertaining.
Well, not
accidentally. Not because it was so poorly done or anything.
Right. Well, I think it also might help in this case, where a lot of that worldview sort of fits in with the context of, you know, it it does kind of go with the story, right? It's not like external to the story. A lot of times when someone has a message, it doesn't fit. It's shoehorned into the story. It doesn't emerge organically from it or anything like that.
Yeah.
You have to give it a little credit for, well, this does sort of belong here in a way, this stuff, if that makes sense.
I'm not sure it fully understands the way death row legislations work. I'm not familiar, so he may have researched the shit out of it, I just don't know. But some of it I was like, really? Is that all it is? Yeah, so you can check that shit out. It's pretty interesting.
Okay. Actually, I might check this one out because it sounds...
You in particular, I think, would find it. Interesting. Yeah. I think it would be a fun one to discuss with you if we ever get to hang out in person again.
Okay.
Once you fail the exam, I guess we'll have time.
Yeah, definitely have time after that. Come on.
Come on, what? You're not going to fail. You are super 100% not. This is your thing.
I know, but... Test is different, right? And I'm gonna narrow it down to the last two things. I'm gonna second guess myself. I'm not worried about not knowing enough. I'm worried about being too nervous or overthinking it. I'm worried about that. Those kinds of things.
In your life, how many exams have you failed?
I flunked a spelling test once in second grade. That was pretty much the only one.
I'm hearing one, and I'm hearing you were seven.
Oh my gosh. No, I would have been eight, I think. But
Fuck you then. 8-year-old flunking a second grade spelling bee or spelling test.
It was a spelling test, and it was one of the first spelling tests I ever had where the words were like not spelled like they sounded. Right. You had to know, like you had to like be exposed to these words and know
what they
look like. And I didn't study for it. I'd forgotten that we were going to have a spelling test and I just flunked it because I didn't know how to spell these words that weren't spelled the way they sound. So yeah, that's probably the only test I've ever failed ever. I've had tests that I didn't do well in though. And the thing about these tests is you've got to do better than, you know, like you can't just do better than say 50% on it. You've got to get a pretty high percentage. These tests are weird because I went to look, I said, well, what is the cutoff for passing this exam? And they couldn't say because what test you get is kind of random. And because of that, they adjust the cutoff based on how difficult they think the exam you got was. So if you happen to get randomly a whole bunch of easy questions, they raise the cutoff. If you get the harder questions, they lower the cutoff. So you don't even know what your cutoff's going to be until after you take the test.
Well, let's just hope you 8-year-old, you learned some lessons.
Oh my gosh. I've taken some sample tests.
I would recommend two things that I have taken away just from the story. Remember when your test is. And study.
Yeah, I'm studying.
There's all right, a lot. Good. You have learned.
There's a lot of material, man. Lots. 8-year-old,
you did not suffer in vain.
I've taken some sample tests and I've done okay.
To the words that don't look like they sound. I don't know how much spelling will be on this exam. But better safe than sorry.
Didn't you send me a video recently about a guy that did a whole comedy routine on how?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, that affected me once in second grade specifically. And it was devastating because I'd never flunked a test before that. And I don't think I've flunked one since. But man, that was awful. And you know what else? I remember at the time, my family really gave me the business for it, too. They really teased me about it. But.
Well. If you fail this one, I'll tease you a bunch.
I know, and I don't want that. I'm going to feel bad enough and have to take the stupid thing again. Oh, my gosh. But at least it's kind of fun to study for it. So that's my consolation.
God, what? I mean,
don't you think that's what all nerds are like? That they think it's fun to like...
As a nerd, no, fuck off.
Well, you're just not a nerd about this.
Do you know why I stay friends with you?
I mean, honestly, no. I don't know why. I don't know why my wife stays married to me. I don't understand any of that.
I don't think I've told you before. This is the thing. I do it for exactly one reason.
Oh, there's just one. Okay, gosh.
Someday, we're going to hit a point, and I don't know if it's going to be the end of our relationship or the sign that we have achieved a level of intimacy or just an accident of happenstance, like an emergency or something. But someday, you're going to reach up, I assume, back in the back here, and just unzip your human suit.
Come on.
And I'm going to be like, I knew it the whole time. And either you're going to be like, I trust you now with this, or you're going to be like, I have my home planet needs me, or I can't use my radar fingers to get us out of this thing unless I'm out of this ridiculous human suit. And I am both just from a curiosity standpoint, but also I need to be proven right on this. At this point, I have to follow through because I know it to be true, and I need the validation.
I have to be like an alien. I can't be like some robot that or artificial intelligence. That's got to be an alien, huh?
It doesn't have to be.
Oh,
I am convinced it will involve a zipper.
What about Velcro? Maybe it'll just, you know, could be Velcro. No,
that doesn't seem safe. You trip and fall, and suddenly, like half of your tentacles are hanging out.
All right, well, okay, a metal zipper then, not one of those cheap plastic ones,
and one of those that like has like a lock thing, like
yeah,
so maybe even a strap with a snap over the top. And that's why I think back here, because how often are you going to catch that on something? That's and probably why you wear your own damn hats.
Yeah, always wear a hat.
See, so you and I. We're going to be friends until that happens. After that point, I don't know. I mean, that's what I'm in this for. So right, I don't know if I'll stick around, assuming you don't have to leave to Xanthorpe 8 or whatever.
Okay. That's good to know. That's good.
Because I want to check it out. Yeah. So
it's not very sophisticated technology, a zipper, but I mean, I suppose it works.
You're not a very sophisticated guy. I calls them like I see them, you alien. All right. It's good that you laugh a lot, because apparently with this new way of recording, you are the thumbnail every time.
Okay.
Despite it on being on my screen as both of us there, it doesn't do that in the recording, I guess.
Oh, weird.
Maybe I'll look in some settings and mess around with it. But anyway, if you have feelings about William being an alien or the Screwtape Letters or any of this stuff, or especially that bullshit I said at the beginning, go to the blog, themagicaltalkinghat.com, and talk about it. Also, email us with whatever the crap you want. Maybe you've got book recommendations. Maybe you read Murderbot Diaries and you want to talk about something in that. Don't spoil it for me, please. Or Lockwood and Company. Or maybe you've got a question vis-a-vis condiments. I don't care. It doesn't have to be impressive. Doesn't have to be interesting. Look at Agitalin. Also, just whatever. Go for it. Those questions that you haven't asked anyone else, ask us. And definitely tune in next week so that I can talk to you about Waffle House training videos.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.